From Vision Australia Radio, it's time to open the cellar door and uncork a classic on Heard It Through the Grapevine.
Well, hello, hello, hello. I'm Michael Hintz with another Heard It Through the Grapevine on Vision Australia Radio, and it's hello from my technical assistant. We've got two today, Tristan Hodson and Lloyd Shirley. Great to be with you again, as I say each week. Ah, so many wines, so little time. How true is that? Now, let's catch up where we left off last week, talking to master winemaker David Morris, the ebullient David Morris. David, welcome back.
How are you going?
Yeah, well, we were talking about the quote about, you know, the old winery with a tin shed and, you know, what you need to make fortifieds. We don't need the super cool, you know, stainless steel tanks and all that sort of thing. And we were talking about just the history. Now let's jump ahead today and talk about, this is a wine that I love, Juruf. And I think it was Mick who, and he wasn't the only one that said this. It's Juruf is like Shiraz on steroids. I think that's a pretty apt description. David, take us through this week's wine of the week. That's your 2010 Morris Juruf at 15% alcohol, screw cap seal, and excellent value for money. Take us through the flavour profile of this wine, David.
Well, you know, I suppose one of the things about Juruf is the palate, probably.
Yep.
Is the thing that I think of first. It's richness of fruit flavour and generosity.
Yes.
And it's got a great amount of flavour, and that balances with tannins, that where if you measure them, they're high, but because matched in so well with the rich flavour.
Yes.
But you don't see the tannins that much, but it gives it great layers of fruit flavour, and that gives the wine great ability to age for a long time. So you can drink it very young because the tannins are integrated with all that rich and generous fruit characters, but it's got that structure that if you did want to put it away for 4 years, you see, you know, that bit of mellowing and softness coming together. Yeah. If you forget about it for 20 years, it's a pleasant surprise. That, you know, all those things, and the palate predominantly does that. The nose, it has also got its own slightly different fruit character than others. It's a little bit more clove or violet.
You know? Yes,
it's very fresh but rich, and you can sort of see that it's a powerful wine just by the fruit nose. But then the palate does give you great generosity. So it's not necessarily a wine that you take along to the barbecue.
No.
But, you know, of an evening, and then with, you know, the fuller meals that you're having, you know, perfect mix.
Yes. Now, the attitude to cellaring wines has changed now, very much so, that probably the average sort of cellar would be a one of those Vintec or Liebherr wine cabinets. If you've got a lot of money, it's a Liebherr, and you can afford that, and your German accent's good. Mine isn't. But for most of us, it'd be a Vintec wine cabinet that holds 20 or 30 bottles or something, and that's fitted, you know, under the bench in the kitchen rather than the traditional cellar where you have to go under the house. The attitudes to drinking big reds have changed a lot now. People want everything now. They're not always prepared to wait in cellar, are they? So how does Juruf meet this demand, where it's okay, the pressure's on winemaking, you've got to make a wine, but you want to get a return on it. You don't want to have it sitting on lees or sitting in your cellar forever, because that costs money. So where does Juruf fit in stylistic now? Is there enough Juruf that you can drink young to please the younger generations?
Yeah, any good Juruf you can drink young.
Yeah.
And you can drink it aged.
Yeah.
Because, and yes, there's less people cellar wines, but there has been a progression from more drinking a lot more medium-bodied Australians to drink more medium-bodied Australian wines to drinking more fuller-bodied as younger wines. So it doesn't matter whether it's, you know, Rutherglen Juruf or Ross or Shiraz or anything else like that, they're consuming those young. But so they're used to drinking rich and generous wines while they're young, and they're in balance. You make them in balance, just that if they're good as a young wine, if you are that small percentage that do sell them, will give you a tremendous reward. They're lovely drinks as young wines because they've got such great flavour and generosity, and as I said, the integrated tannins and that kind of match up so well with your food dishes and sort of harmonise very well there. So they are great as a young wine, and it's just that probably less people are actually cellaring them and seeing the benefits of, you know, that the cellaring is really the knock your socks off stuff where you go, wow, see, I didn't think that had, I loved it as a young wine, and I didn't even think it could do anything like that. You know?
Yes.
You can get a lot of satisfaction out of, you know, cellaring wines, but it's, you've got to have the right conditions as well.
Yes, of course. And this wine, to me, is a rich, brooding, robust. It's a pretty complex wine, intensely flavoured with, as I say, traces of spice, bit of chocolate, but to me, it's got that hallmark of good wines. It's quality fruit. It's got good balance. And you're quite right. The tannins sort of creep up on you. They don't hit you like, you know, when you're drinking sometimes a young Cabernet. You know, the tannins will come and coat your tongue in fur, won't they?
Well, some of the Cabernets, as I say, Cabernet could be a bit of a donut where you've got the initial flavour sensation. Bit missing in the mid-palate.
And you've
got your tannins on the end where the drift has got a more even flow to it, and the fruit flavour engulfs the tannins, and it sort of integrates well with them. And you need tannin to make a good wine style.
Yes,
but your tannin has got to actually match the body of your wine. It's no good of having a medium-bodied wine with big tannins.
No, which would overpower it. Yeah,
and that'll never come together with aging.
No.
So if you've got nice, generous, rich fruit with the balanced tannins now, it's good. It just gets more, basically the aging process is the flavours mellow and the tannins soften and they sort of harmonise better together. But
it's a bit like us, isn't it? People. Some people age well and other people will forget it. You know?
That's right, and it's the conditions that they're aged in sometimes as well.
Yes, of course.
We'll put that down to that.
Yes. Now, look, I want to explode a myth today. A lot of people think, Rutherglen, big wines, high alcohol therefore makes it a big wine. In this climate where you've got, a fairly virulent anti-alcohol lobby and wine gets lobbed in with spirits and alcohol abuse, whereas, in my opinion, that's not necessarily the case with wine drinkers. But Rutherglen suffers from this misnomer that, its big reds are always high alcohol, which they're not, and people get hung up on the alcoholic content. And they therefore that gets translated, a big wine is a high alcohol wine, rather than concentrating on the nature of the fruit and the mouthfeel of the wine. Is that a point that needs sorting out?
Yeah, that's a fair comment. A big wine is a rich and generous wine.
Yes.
A small wine, we don't use that, but that's pretty lean and mean, mate.
Yeah.
So, but to be rich, big is another word for full-bodied.
Yeah.
And there's lots of areas in Australia that make full-bodied wines.
Yeah.
Usually those full-bodied wines are 14 to 15% alcohol, probably mostly in that range.
Yeah.
But one of the things is you've got to, when you've got the grapes on the vine, you've got to pick it when they are what's called physiologically ripe.
Yes.
It's when the green characters have gone out of it. Now, if we picked it too early, and in the cooler years, you've often got to let it hang a little bit longer.
Yep.
And I think 2010 was a little bit cooler, so hence we just had to wait for the green characters because you don't want to taste something that's stalky or red capsicum in character and things like that. So, because that actually even imparts a bit of bitterness. So that's why you're usually about 14 to 15% alcohol. There are, in all parts of Australia, some winemakers that have got different philosophies and may, go to 16, 17.
Andrew Sutherland Smith at Warrabilla does that.
That's right, and that's his style, and he believes strongly in it.
Now, what do you think of his style?
I think it's good because it gives the consumer an option of do they want that normal style or do they want something different. It's not, Andrew's or some of these others that are 16, 17%.
Yep.
Not many winemakers do them, but that's what they believe in, and that's great. But, all winemakers have got different philosophies on how to make wine and everything else like that. I might have a different, style on how I, manage the tannins and things like that because that's, very important. And so everyone, all winemakers have got their own philosophy.
Well, at the other end of the spectrum, we've got Scion, haven't you? The wines coming out of there.
Yeah, they're a relatively new winery.
They're a relatively new winery, and they're on the down, around about the 12% mark, aren't they, alcohol, some of them?
Oh, right. I hadn't necessarily noticed that. I'd probably, pick up the glass and taste the glass. And they do make good wines, and they've got a good giraffe. Done very well at them. I would have thought it was a bit riper than 12%, but the quality's good in the glass, and that's all that matters, basically.
Yeah, I'd say some of their wines may be 12%, but it might be the giraffe, you're right. But what I was trying to say is that, look, there's a spectrum of wines coming out of Rutherglen, and people shouldn't get hung up on a high alcoholic content as a criticism.
No, it's all about the flavour.
It's all about the flavour, isn't it?
And everything else like that, and then personal preference there.
And do you think Rutherglen has been a bit of a misnomer, for making these big wines? And a lot of people confuse big, not with robust, but big with, they confuse it with, they really mean high alcohol content?
Maybe some are, I'm not sure. But, we're probably, no different of an area, say, like the Barossa, where, they've got a couple of people over there that might make 16.5% wines, but most of us are in that, 14 to 15 range. And that's predominantly where, 95% of both regions' wines would be made. But it's great to have that diversity. And I think most people are actually judging it by what's in the glass. But it's one or two that like to be different.
Yeah, yeah. Look, you also make a lovely Shiraz Giraffe sparkling red, and I've confessed here I'm a sparkling red fan from way back, as listeners would know. And the Giraffe, to me, and you're talking about that quality that it gives it in the fruit and the forward palate, it just gives the wine an extra texture and flavour and richness. Don't you agree when the Giraffe is added to the Shiraz and the sparkling?
Very much so. That's why it's in the blend.
Yep.
The component, because traditionally Australian sparkling Burgundies, as they were called, were made from Shiraz, which is a very suitable variety because Shiraz is full. Sparkling Burgundy meant full-bodied, soft finish. The Shiraz is a nice full-bodied, generous style of wine with softer tannin. Giraffe has actually got great richness, so it only supports the palate. So we don't mind using a bit. We've got to be careful not to use too much because Giraffe can impart a little bit too much tannin. But, we've probably around that 25 to 30% mark usually for the Giraffe in the blend. We have been as high as about 45% though. But just depends on the vintages and how they go together to make the most complete wine with, generous and rich, full-flavoured, and then the softer tannins that you expect in that sparkling red style.
Yeah, Mark Scalzo at Rutherglen Estates also makes a good Shiraz Giraffe, I think, and Damien Cofield makes a good, mean sparkling Shiraz, and likewise Christabel Anderson, I think, taken over from her father, I think.
That's right, and there's a couple more sparkling reds in the Rutherglen area, and that's all because the area is suitable for that style, and the first thing, we're after something of full-bodied, generous flavour. If you try and use a lighter base, it comes out pretty ordinary, and so that's where Rutherglen produces big reds, but generous, full-flavoured reds.
David, we're out of time. So look.
Oh, again, are we?
Yeah, we are. Thank you very much for your time last week and this week. It's really great to talk to you, and really appreciate that. And good luck with the judging that's about to happen at the Rutherglen Show.
Yep, great to talk to you. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you very much, David. Hello, I'm Michael Hinson. You're listening to Heard It Through the Grapevine on Vision Australia Radio and coming to you nationally through the Community Radio Network. Sacre bleu. A recent survey in France concluded that 7 out of 10 French people don't know their Chablis from their Champagne. According to the survey, a summation likely to ruffle a few feathers in a country known for its wine prowess. Wine is much more than just a tipple for the French. It's officially part of the nation's cultural heritage and part of how they perceive themselves and are in turn perceived by the rest of the world. However, the millennial generation are increasingly turning to drinking spirits and beer more so than wine and more so than their parents did. Furthermore, the French recently went as far as to bestow a national heritage status upon their wines and vines. Now, you'd have to ask, why was there need to do that? Well, according to the poll by Via Voice, whether it's a newspaper or magazine, I'm not sure, on behalf of the magazine Terre de Vin, Wine Country, 71% of French admitted to not knowing much at all about their national drink. When asked whether they considered themselves to be knowledgeable about wine, 71% of those surveyed said no. And of those, 43% admitted to knowing nothing at all. Sacre bleu, as I said before, I can't believe this. 26% of participants said they knew enough, with only 3% saying they knew a lot. Via Voice also found a correlation between social class and wine knowledge, with the white-collar workers being far more likely to know something about their wine rather than their blue-collar compatriots. According to Via Voice, it's primarily the social differences that structure the sense of wine knowledge. Evidence indicates that an elitist initiation to wine still exists in French society, but also that a feeling, real or perceived, for many households with a limiting purchase power, that they can't really, there's a growing feeling they can't afford to buy quality wines. Terre de Vin said 51% of those surveyed supported an introduction to wine and moderate consumption for youths in response to what they see as irresponsible drinking behaviour abroad. Faced with the binge-drinking phenomenon and the massive exposure of youngsters to alcohol, wine, which is a mark of civilization, constitutes a healthier and more cultured alternative, added the magazine. I'd say hear to that. In general, French people think the wine world is complicated because behind the taste there is a whole universe and language they fear expressing an opinion about. Well, they're not alone. What was surprising is that 51% of people thought youngsters should learn more about wine through tastings at the age of 17 to combat binge drinking. As the legal age to drink alcohol is 18, this breaks something of a taboo in France. A Via Voice surveyed, now here's the interesting thing, 1,015 adults last May, the 28th and 30th, I think, or sometime in May for the poll. However, I'm by no means convinced that this is an adequate statistical sample, and therefore is it a true reflection of reality in France as it exists today? Or is it on par with what's happening in the US and UK? Who knows? when it comes to wine knowledge. Also, the sample size of the survey makes it statistically, insignificant, and its results are certainly not a reliable indicator of how many people know wine in France, know about wine, or what level of knowledge they may have. I suggest that over 90% of French adults would know the difference between Chablis and Champagne. While I do admit there a lot of the younger people are drinking less wine and turning more to spirits and beer. So that's just a fact of life. What the survey found was that 70% felt they didn't know much about wine. That's because they realise there's more to learn. Very different from the view in the UK, where most people feel they already have enough wine knowledge. So there we go. Well, still in La Belle France, there was good and bad news recently for France's wine industry. It's emerged the country is set to overtake Italy to become the world's largest wine producer again, although a fall in demand from China has seen some French exports plummet. Now, it's usually the biggest producer mantle switches between Italy and France from time to time. There's nothing new about this. Italy recently was hit by unusually wet and cold weather this summer, with a devastating effect on its wine harvest, so that'll have something to do with it. As a result, wine grape production in Italy is set to fall to 41 million hectolitres, down a massive 15% on last year, and the smallest yield Italy has had in wine grapes since 1950. By contrast, France's wine production is forecast to hit 45 million hectolitres this year, up around 42 million hectolitres on the 2013 figure. If the forecasts are accurate, France will overtake Italy to become the world's largest wine producer by volume. In Italy, falls in output of up to 30% are expected in Sicily and other parts, and the regions, some regions that have been hard hit by bad weather and the consequent prevalence of a number of plant diseases which affect vine yields. Total rainfall across the country in Italy in, back in July was 73% higher than normal, higher than the monthly average, and a trend that both significantly reduced tourist spending and, of course, diluted the wine-producing potential of grapes. Wet weather at the hottest time of the year is particularly bad for grape producers because it encourages forms of fungal rot. Italy's wine sector is a significant player in the country's struggling economy. It's this is Italy, still in Italy. Its 200,000 producers employ over or well over 1 million people, I think it's 1.25 million, and have a combined turnover of 9.5 billion euros. Now, I'll leave you to work out on the exchange rate how many dollars that is, but that's a hell of a lot of dollars, half of which is raised from exports of Italian wine. But all is not rosy in France either. Winemakers may find that shifting the fruits of their bumper harvest will become increasingly difficult with international demand, particularly from China, at present in decline. Exports of French wine in the first half of the year fell by well over 3% in volume and 7% in value compared with the same period last year. Now, in China at the moment, there's an anti-corruption and frugality drive, which is the main culprit, with the anti-extravagance drive that began last year and has clearly impacted on the higher value luxury products, such as the great cognacs and the Bordeaux wines. China has risen to become overall, nevertheless, China has risen to become the fifth biggest export destination for French wine and spirits. But China's purchases, which are usually in the high-end range, suddenly melted away in the first 6 months of this year, falling by 9% in volume and by nearly a third in value. The drop-off in demand from China comes amid the global combination of consumption of wine. The amount of wine drunk worldwide fell 1% last year to 239 million hectolitres, after 4 years of near stability, according to a recent report by the International Vine and Wine Organisation. Now, the results are in from the Riverina Wine Show back here in Australia. And although only a ruby-coloured Shiraz might have been thought more appropriate for the 40th anniversary celebration, it was a Chardonnay, namely the 2013 Chantelin Wines Individual Vineyard Chardonnay from the Yarra Valley, which took home the top honour of Best Still Wine of the Show. This is the Riverina Wine Show. The young winemakers of Chantelin, Rebecca and Adrian Chantelin, said it was great to start their winemaking careers, which only began a couple of years ago in 2012 when they produced their first Pinot Noir. Before this, they'd worked in the wine industry for about 15 years and finally managed to save and start creating their own label. The 2013 vintage was great in the Yarra Valley. There we go. So that's what's happening. Now, for the fourth year in a row, a Barossa Riesling won the best, this is the Riverina Wine Show, Best Dry Floral Style White Trophy, and the Hunter Valley dominated the Best Sémillon, not surprisingly there. Well, we're getting towards, it's time again, 12 minutes goes very quickly, or this time just flies by. Well, that's about your lot for now. My research material is sourced from my home library, winebiz.com, Morris of Rutherglen, The Fin Review. This has been another Heard It Through the Grapevine on Vision Australia Radio, heard on all stations around Australia via the Community Radio Network. It's cheers from me, Michael Hintz, and please drink moderately.
Heard It Through the Grapevine is a production of Vision Australia Radio. Sound information.